Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are going back to Spain. Specifically, we are going to talk Catalonia, the recent Catalonian elections, what they mean for the area, the region, what they mean for Spain as a whole and where things are going now since the independence movement has come up against a lot of a pandemic and maybe has fallen a little bit to the wayside. We will also be discussing the recent jailing of a rapper for insulting the king, among other things, and freedom of speech issues. And we will get into some of the grim numbers behind Spain's current COVID crisis. As always, you can support these podcasts by going to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Reminder, we are live on Sunday at 12 with a group of guests and our live audience, online audience. If you want to attend, do come along, click on the link. It is also available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We have a lot to get through, but it's always the most fun podcast of the week. Anyway, enough of my waffling on. It's time to go to our guest, our good friend in Madrid, Professor Joe Haslam. Joe, it's been a crazy few weeks. It's been a crazy few years at this stage in terms of Spanish politics and Catalan politics. And they've gone to the polls in the middle of a pandemic. And where do we stand now?
Sure. And hello, Tony. Hello, Martin. It's great to be on with you again. Every time you have Joan from Portugal, I always think like I want to try and have the same number of appearances. It's a sort of little Iberian rivalry we have going. But of course, famously, you know, Spain paid no interest to Portugal and Portugal pays no interest to Spain. So even though they're sort of connected, one of them thinks the border ends at the sea. But the elections in Catalan, you know, this is when it starts to get very nerdy and anarchy, you know, for the nerds, everything has changed and everything is different and nothing will ever be the same. But for the people on the street, nothing has really changed. Things have moved up and down. You know, certainly the biggest change is that the ERC have overtaken Junts per Cat, which is, you know, a big change because Junts have always been the party that's been most identified with the process, which is what they call it here, the secession movement. And this is, you know, the ERC were sort of arguing for a more of an understanding line, which is to say that, you know, there was a declaration of independence made and not a single country in the world recognized it. And that was after a long process. So the idea that you would just like, you know, do exactly the same again and expect a different results, which is essentially what Junts were asking for, the ERC tended to have more of a kind of a listen, try and extend the base was their argument, which is if to say that if it's around about the 50% mark, it's very hard to get international support. But if you can get it up to like the 60%, 66%, then international countries will look at it. And that's what, you know, the Canadian Supreme Court sort of decided that they talked about a two-thirds majority rather than a simple majority. So that's been the biggest change in the election, that you're now going to have, instead of having sort of, you know, Quim Torra was the president and then Carlos Puigdemont in exile, you'll now have Pere Aragonès, which is, he's not a very charismatic man, which is kind of a problem in terms of, you know, he's not really, he's a different kind of a profile. But it'll be also interesting to see how Junts will behave now that they're not in charge. You know, they're sort of a Christian Democrat tradition is kind of the polite way, which everyone in Ireland will be familiar from. Mm-hmm. And they like to be in charge. They like to be, you know, in charge. So it'll be interesting to see. It's a bit like to say, like, you know, we want independence, yes, but on our terms, as opposed to and us getting the credit for it, as opposed to the ERC being in the driving seat.
And how are you going to handle the election, Joe? How is the election being handled in a pandemic?
Well, there was the question as to whether it would be held. And, you know, there was the independence movement were kind of trying to not have it. This is started when Spanish conspiracy theories come in and this separation of powers and how much it applies and how much doesn't it apply. But they decided that it had to happen and it did happen last Sunday in Valentine's Day. But they also, what they did was that the turnout was much lower But the kind of the independents, I guess people who support independents would tend to be more motivated. So that was the sort of the idea that the independents were sort of like, okay, let's kind of try that. And that was the case because, I mean, you can argue about the maths, but you know, by one interpretation of the maths, they have got now 50% of people of parties voted for independence, which was a big milestone they had. But of course, they've lost it in other ways. But yeah, definitely the pandemic had an effect on the number of people that were able to come out for vote. And I think over time, elections will probably have to do more postal votes and things like that. I think even after the pandemic subsides, I think that the way in which voting takes place, I think in general, we'll start to look at it. Because if you remember Bertie Ahern and his pencils and all that kind of stuff, I think that, it's never a good situation when you have, only 50% turnout. Because previously they had, I think it was 78% turnout, which of course was in 2017 when the tension levels were at its highest. So the vote took place. Otherwise, there would have been a vacuum, and vacuums are very dangerous. But as you say, the turnout was low, so it's very hard to really interpret the results.
Sorry, Joe, but just one thing on it, and I want to be clear on this for listeners, just on the actual mix. The mix is broadly in, the pro-independent movements. If you put them together, yes, the argument was, were you going to be run more centrally by Madrid or by Brussels in exile kind of thing? And all of this, it was quite toxic. I mean, there was, people were called fascists on stage. People were called terrorists. But what we saw in another thing, and it's actually, you mentioned João Pina earlier, and we saw in the presidential election in Portugal, a far right candidate, got 13% of the vote. That's not insignificant. And we saw now in this election, Vox have for the first time, they've won some seats and they've managed to carve a little niche for themselves. It has to be something that must be on everybody's radar.
Sure. Well, for the purposes of our Cork listeners, we have to, of course, mention that the head of the far-right party in Portugal is a distinguished graduate of University College Cork. So, he was radicalized by the Lee in the law. He has a PhD from the law department. So, and of course, like our own, we as very often happens when we look at others, we should always look at your own house. And of course, we had a racist candidate who actually did even better than Chega in Portugal. So in that sense, you sort of keep your own cupboards clean before you do anything else. Now, in terms of Vox and their rise, again, the beauty of everything being polarized is that you have two interpretations of almost everything. And, the pro-independent side will always say that whether it's Vox or whether it's Ciudadanos or whether it's Pepe, that they're all the same. They're all like centralist, fascist, all that kind of stuff. And that, Vox just articulate out loud, what the PP feel in their heart, which is sort of they're all the act. So they don't make a big deal about the rise of Vox. I mean, on a personal level, it's just never nice when you see somebody standing up and saying out loud about immigration and stuff like that. That's not nice. But, I often have a debate. I was having one this morning as to when, the things you worry about are the silent people who do bad things behind closed doors. They're often a lot more dangerous than people who are in the streets shouting, blaming illegal immigration for everything and this kind of stuff. So there is, of course, the big argument as to what the PP should do, the Partido Popular. They are notionally a centre-right party. And what do you do if like suddenly there is a kind of a harder right alternative? Because, we saw this in France, I guess, is probably the leading example. And Manuel Valls, who was a former prime minister, came to spend some time in Catalonia. And he always said that, that you can't, like when the hard right emerges, that you legitimize it by trying to kind of steal their clothing in any way, and that ultimately the people will vote for the real thing. That trying to be a kind of a decaf version of the hard right, ultimately if people want the hard right and the hard right presents itself. So, he argues that you know, that in when challenged with hard right policies, that you should move towards the center. But of course, what you have then is you have a debate internally, which is to say that, you know, your supporters want one thing. And I think the supporters never like kind of being challenged within their own area, like the narcissist of small difference. But if you don't move to the center of where elections are won, I mean, Tony Blair is, you know, that was the point he always made. He said, I ran three elections from the center. So that's, I guess, the summary of the situation, that it's not nice to see Vox. But I think, you know, they're sort of on the other side. They're not really making a big deal about it because they're saying it's just a manifestation of what was there already. I should say... Go ahead, Martin. Yeah.
I was just going to say, the last time we spoke to you, Joe, you said that the far right didn't have purchase with what we'll call ground troops, that it was mainly an ideological thing. Has that changed?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's the protest element of it. I mean, almost none of the people who voted for Vox have in their wardrobe a pair of jackboots, you know. There would be a lot of them, I mean, you know, we can see the areas in which they voted. A lot of them would be, you know, people Spanish speaking rather than Catalan speakers who are just kind of sick of the fact that they go into the bread shop in the morning and they speak to the guy in Spanish and the guy speaks back in Catalan, and this kind of thing goes on. And, you know, the idea is that by the law, the languages are supposed to be treated equally. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. And like, sort of, how do you annoy the person? The other thing, of course, is that the independence question is kind of off the table now. I mean, you could say the pandemic has been, both the pandemic has taken it off the table and also the fact that it wasn't recognized internationally. So that kind of legitimizes, a bit like in a referendum, you know, you can kind of vote for the extreme option because in the way that in a general election, you can't really. And that was kind of the attitude people took, which is to say that, like, by voting for Vox rather than, say, voting for Ciudadanos or voting for PP, that you can kind of send a message to just annoy the people that you wanted to get back at without it having actually any consequences. You know, the parliament now is just going to be a shit show. You know, it's just going to be an absolute shit show of, you know, the guy will, like, literally, you know, one guy will start speaking Catalan, the other guy will reply in Spanish, the other guy will say, like, that's just what it's going to be. And the PP weren't really like that, but Vox are the men of, as you say, they have all their kind of social media is all like all these dark forces that we all hear about in other countries are their people in Spain. So they really push them about the idea of, you know, say something extreme in Parliament, 30 seconds on Twitter, you know, clicks, outrage, like that's their model. So this is kind of, you know, what they will do. So expect basically the parliament to be
but they do give credit cover to, as you know, like as we've seen in our short history, we saw how the PDs gave great cover to other parties to be able to creep further to the right, you know, as they do borrow their clothes. We've seen it with the Christian Democratic parties across Europe, in fact, where they've, you know, where they've gone from certain civil liberties to not being as vocal about it, but pandering a little bit more to that side. And it is a risky road to go down. And part of me wonders, Joe, how much of this, going back to the central question in Spain, you know, some of this Vox movement, there's a lot of, we can talk about, you know, the elements of people feeling actual and having really feeling, you know, inequality drives this and, you know, being disenfranchised in society drives this, but there's also an element of the well-to-dos are unhappy that people are trying to address those inequalities they're seeding some of the things. Like we saw the I gonna call it histrionics when the Spanish Parliament just tried to pass a budget.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing to say is that, you know, there is a sort of theory that Vox was kind of created by PP to sort of shift the argument. You know, that was kind of, as you say, what they wanted to do, which, you know, might make them feel good within their own party, among their own kind, to use a phrase, but it doesn't help them win elections. The candidate I was most interested or most impressed by throughout the campaign, and you know, for my sins, you watch the debates. I mean, really, political debates. It's one of those, like, you know, open a bottle of whiskey and force yourself to go through it. Was the Podemos candidate? They have a different structure in that they are affiliated to, they're the Catalan affiliation of the Podemos party. They're not directly affiliated, but Jessica Albert was, you know, she was trying to talk about like the kind of things that we would be interested in, like, you know, social justice, inequality, feminism, the green movement, the environment. I was really impressed by her. And, you know, she's a sort of like, you know, she's this kind of, you know, the coping classes kind of thing, you know, interested in schools and hospitals and like was trying desperately to have an argument and have, you know, have these and you know, then you had one guy's talking about prisoners and the other people talking about, you know, like the kind of that. Why we don't want to have this situation whereby we're fighting with our neighbors, you know, and they were all talking about these things and she was desperately trying to talk. Now, Tony's wider point about exactly how different, you know, Junts are a right-wing Christian Democrat party. I mean, the Independence Coalition is comprised of Junts, who are a Christian Democrat party, the ERC, which I guess are a left-wing party notionally, and then you have the COOP, which are the maddest political party in all of Europe. And you know, they believe it, like, they're notionally anti-capitalist, but you know, they believe it. I mean, God, I have read their manifesto. They believe in all sorts of shared parenting and all sorts of things. But what's kind of interesting, I think that Junts in control wouldn't be that much different to the PP being in control. It's still very much, you know, if you want to talk in terms of left or right, it's right wing, it's the market, it's, you know, conservative decisions. There's certainly no, you know, green agenda. Like the German Greens are easily the most interesting political party in Europe right now. Those guys, and they have had a lot of success. So, you know, what's happening in Catalonia is it's sort of like being kind of, you know, fucked over by a different kinds of elite as opposed to one kinds of elite.
One of the main beefs you have with the ERC is obviously the fact that, and it's not unfounded totally insofar as that, yes, they're a left-leaning center-left party, but they are certainly, they have feathered their own nest over decades, you know. And I mean, some of the points that landed in this campaign were the ones where they said, you know, well, part of the reason we're under-resourced is because you have two holiday homes and you have, you know, and it was a lot of that successfully done. It was successfully done to paint that. We can use the old analogy of smoked salmon socialists, but
let me say a really important point, and this comes back to, like, you know, I classes I teach, and you know, like, teaching is a very honest profession because the students will call you out and stuff in ways that other people won't. And you know, like, socialism by definition is an international movement, like, that's, it's either international, so it's incompatible with being nationalist. You know, you cannot be a socialist and a nationalist. It's incompatible. Now, you know, like, labels, and, you know, in the same way that you have Republicans in the north of Ireland, you have Republicans in the US, so terms get kind of interchanged and stuff like that. But it is very, you know, it's always been the argument that, you know, they're E or C. Are they more E, meaning left, or are they more R, meaning, like, independent, right? So there's a sort of a contradiction between those two things. I mean, what should happen is that the left element of them should be stronger than the R element, and they should, of course, go into coalition now with the Socialist Party, who are now the leading party, and they should advance leftist politics. That's what should happen. But of course, they've kind of almost too much invested in the independence question. You know, they still have their leader is still in jail. You know, there's it's just too hard to, they just can't deal with being accused of being frauds and sellouts and stuff like that. So this is the sort of the question for them now, which is to say, it looks like they probably will go back. But what they are trying to do is actually what I've always argued that they should do. So, which is to try and extend the base, you know, because if you have 66% of people saying, I've always, you know, my discussion with people who support the process has always been, if this thing is so great, how come you can't get more than 50% of people to vote for it? You know, if it's a genuinely non-discriminatory, you know, non-corruption, you know, all of the things, you know, we would want, then how come only 50%? Like, what are the people afraid of? And I think that the ERC are now trying to widen the base. That's what Oriol's Junqueras has said, that he wants to widen the base. So that will be interesting to see how it goes, because, you know, Junts do not have that kind of inclusive agenda. And this is the problem with nationalism. I mean, nationalism is the other thing that's really interesting, and why historically Catalonia, when in post-democratic Spain, was not a nationalist party. Jordi Pujols always avoided being called a nationalist. He called himself a Christian Democrat, because he felt that nationalism, you know, was a sort of a poisonous thing, that it always leads to a kind of who's more nationalist and othering and non-inclusive and all of those kind of things. And he resisted that for as long as he could. And in fact, his movement resisted it long as good, except when austerity came, and austerity was really the break in this, because once austerity came, then the nationalists gained populism spirit, and then basically you had to become nationalists or be out of power. And that's the problem that Junts have now, which is to say that literally there's a kind of a nationalist arms race, and that's not at all territory they're comfortable in. They're essentially a Christian Democrat, you know, merchant classes, you know, that kind of, that's their agenda. And you know, but somehow they've got themselves, you know, into this situation.
Joe, just to change it a little, there's a chap called Pablo Hasel, and he's a rapper, and he barricaded himself in during the week, and the cops came from, and there was a hoo-ha, and he was arrested. But am I right in this, that he's accused of glorifying terrorism and being disrespectful of the royalty?
Okay. Well, I mean, people are talking about this a lot. I mean, look, you'd like to congratulate him on his achievement. He eventually got to jail. You know, I mean, it's the sort of like, you know, someone said, like, you know, if I had said to you, Martin, like, you know, for, you know, listen, business is business, and, you know, a jailed rapper will sell more than, like, the music is of course awful. Like, how would you get into jail? Like, it's actually hard in many ways to get arrested. Like, I mean, this is what the kind of thing I do in my classroom. I said, say, right, if you wanted to get in jail, how would you do it? Like, would you just break windows? You know, that kind of thing. And like, he's literally just, he's just taken off the streets almost. He's in trouble with them. He has assaulted journalists. He has, you know, he's fined traffic stuff. Yeah, you know, like, he's just basically a series of kind of stuff until eventually it's like, God, you know. Now, there are other cases as well. And there has been a terrible thing called a gag law, which I you know, absolutely opposed to, brought in during Rajoy's time. And it was, you know, absolutely the powers that it gave. And, you know, that should be repealed. But, like, this is not a hill to die on, you know, some rapper that, like, wants to. Plus, this happens in other countries as well. You know, I mean, as someone said, like, that she's like 80. Like, there isn't even a kind of an ideological consistency to it. It's like, OK, think of all the people, like, so he's glorifying terrorism, anti-royal family, like, it's just sort of, you know, everything that tries to get anyone who easily gets offended, right? So, like, okay, write down the list of all the people who get offended, and then just kind of offend them, and that's kind of, you know, his game.
It is kind of a bad look to arrest somebody for being disrespectful of royalty. That is kind of a bad look. And we've seen it in Thailand recently as well, that you can't insult the royalty. But you would think that Spain is further along the evolutionary line on insulting
you,
royalty.
You mean in terms of democracy, Martin?
In terms of being able to say what you like about your monarchy.
It's an interesting one because, like, you're pointing out the fact that the guy has a criminal record for other reasons other than this, and yeah. But it's also uncomfortable with the idea that, you know. We've seen situations in the UK where satirists have had knocks on the door from the police. You know, we've seen, we don't have to go back too far to see Twitter being taken down in Turkey because Erdogan didn't like what was being shared. So,
but Tony, here's the thing: like, I've been in Turkey and people tell you don't tweet. You know, like they actually tell you that. Like in Spain, like I slag off the royal family all the time. You know, like, and I'm not fearing the Guardia Civil at my door, you know, like the law thing is interesting, and you know, Vicky Conway's podcast is excellent because people's knowledge of the law and of these kind of is actually quite poor. Most people don't ever really come in contact with the law. You know, it's a sort of and you know, you will talk to people in certain areas of whether it's Ireland or whether when the law, like interactions with the law are a daily basis. But you have this kind of comfortable middle class thing. I mean, that has been an issue in Catalonia where, you know, only certain kinds of people are arrested, you know, going back to King Lear, you know, to tattered clothes, small vices to appear. And there's a lot of activism that happens whereby people are breaking laws, but they kind of feel because, well, like the police aren't, you know, the police are there to protect us. So, you know, like, a whacker, go back to my childhood in Limerick, like some guy from, you know, the island breaks a window and, you know, he'll have the police on top of him with someone from South Circular Road or something, you know, can do what he likes. And it's like, you know, like, and that has kind of been an issue in Catalonia. I mean, I knew some very mild-mannered, you know, law professors who would never have, you know, done anything, but like then they were authoring documents which were constitutionally, and then they're surprised when the police is kind of arresting them. So that's a really interesting, and Philip O'Connor was talking about this on Eamon Dunphy's podcast as well, that this is a thing in Sweden, you know, that like there's a huge class element to a lot of things, which is why, you know, the stuff Vicky is doing is really excellent. And it's even the same with our friend Leo Delique, you know, this idea that, I mean, on prima facie evidence, he looks to have leaked a document. Now, I don't know whether that, but he has no, like, you know, expectation that anything would ever happen to him because, you know, but that's more on convention rather than the strict interpretation of the law.
Yeah, but just to push in on that, because it was very interesting 90 seconds when he was interviewed about it last night, and he said, I haven't spoken to the Gardaí yet. They haven't asked me, but I've told them I'm willing to talk to them, and I've done nothing wrong, and my legal advice tells me I've done nothing wrong. And then 15 seconds later, he said, and obviously I wouldn't do it again. It was the wrong thing to have done. And you're going, which is it? Like, yeah. And why is that? And you're quite right. It's, you know, we go back to the story about a young man that Vicky spoke to about when he got into trouble, the police came knocking as opposed to he was brought to his parents. And that was, you know, that spiral.
It goes back to, you know, it goes back to the whole Bad Day in Black Rock, all that case, you know, like all that, like about, like, that's, it's one of the most interesting cases cover about that, which is to say, like, you know, that middle-class people are told never speak to the police, you know, like that's the thing you never do, you know, and it's sort of people know that and, you know, kind of, I guess, working class people or whatever term you want to use. So this, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating because the whole relationship with the police and there are a lot of people. I mean, you ask why the secession process has come down in Spain. And, you know, we have people who are saying that the people who stormed the Capitol in the US should all be put in jail. And they have no difficulty saying that because that's secession, rebellion and all these kind of things. But then, like, exactly what was going on in Catalonia where they were like passing an entire law without, you know, consultation or revision within a 3-hour period and declaring unilateral independence. I mean, this is the kind of question where, I mean, you know, you Desi O'Malley, you know, has all these speeches about I stand by the Republic and, you know, talks about how there are, you know, the laws and all these things are very delicate things. The means by which someone takes half my income, the means at which they take away my liberty, the very definition that I expect pensions, I expect all of these is a very delicate kind of a thing. And you play with that sort of at your peril. And that's when, you know, people making analogies with what happens in Turkey versus, you know, some talentless rapper decides to kind of, you know, get a bit of publicity. And that's all a kind of a free speech hill we should die on. I wish neither of the things were true. I wish there was no repression in Turkey. I wish that, you know, that rappers, but like, you know, I guess Tony might like this idea that they don't arrest Pablo Alborán. You know, you ask your Catalan cousins, who's like a very pleasant folk singer who's, you know, talks about the beauty of Catalonia. If Pablo Alborán is arrested, you know, I'm on the barricades. Like, but you know, Pablo Hasél, I'm like, Jesus, you know, it's his inmate. It's the other people in the prison I feel sorry for.
It sounds, you know, when you're explaining the political vista in Spain, it sounds tumultuous, but in reality, very little has changed. Am I right about that?
Well, you know, Spain is a loving country. You know, it's a sort of have fun, spontaneous, like this idea of like, you know, whatever, this is the second most visited country in the world. It has the best healthcare system. You know, all of the reasons why people love Spain, you know, this is why... You know, the idea of selling Catalonia as a repressed state, you know, you just walk down the main street and it doesn't look very repressed to me, you know, like this is the issue that they've always had with trying to, you know, compare themselves to like Martin Luther King and this kind of stuff. So like when given the chance, most Spanish people just want to go out and party till from dawn to dusk. And, you know, that's still their instinct. And that's still what you feel on the street. But yeah, of course, when you open the newspapers, you know, like the right-wing newspapers are outrage, outrage, outrage. And then the left-wing newspapers are democracy, democracy. So, you know, but on a day-to-day basis, most Spanish people, I mean, it's quite incredible, actually. I mean, I, you know, first reference to my wife, she just had no interest in any of this. Like absolutely no interest. And that's very common, you know, and that's Spain in many ways. They just want to be free of politics. You know, they just want to go out and have fun. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I like the country. Here's me worried about like the Greenland elections. Last night here was like at 2 o'clock in the morning reading about the Greenland elections and, ooh, they could become independent, you know, but then what would happen with the Chinese mineral rights? And, you know, like, I mean, that's a bit of an illness as well, right?
Yeah,
you
no, know? That way lies absolute madness. But just coming back to the part where everybody wants to go out and have fun, mm-hmm. The pandemic is still raging. It's still... You know, where like it's 3,415 deaths last week, Joe. I mean, it's a level like Spain has been really hit and hit very hard. The economy has taken a huge impact. Like, I mean, obviously tourism is dead and we don't know what 2021 summer looks like if it happens at all. How bad is it both still in terms of the living with the pandemic and the damage to the economy? Are people actually thinking there's going to be a summer?
Yeah, I mean, three things there to talk about. The first thing is something I've mentioned, I think, the previous time I was on with you, that Spain has a public health system. Like, you know, this is the big thing we don't have in Ireland. You know, that literally the public system is seen for people who aren't poor enough to have private, you know, some of them will probably reject my, you know, offensive, but that's sort of the way in which it was. It came from religious orders, charity, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas the public system is something in Spain that is valued. The idea that a healthy population is a productive population. And, you know, we have private health. My wife has private health insurance from her company, but we would never use it. You know, it's a sort of like, you know, it's the public system is seen as being good and that kind of thing. So public Spain has infrastructure in order to manage the situation and also it doesn't have that many choices because the sort of system kicks in. Now, the other thing to say is, so, you know, Ireland is going to have, those of you that have read The Economist this week, the big thing they were arguing was that governments have to stop thinking in terms of managing managing the pandemic and instead start planning for the post-pandemic situation, which I guess in Ireland's case is we really have to try and do something about a public healthcare system to manage an ongoing as opposed to trying to manage the short-term needs. The second thing is that health is a decentralized function. In other words, it's managed by the regions. So Madrid, the situation in Madrid is very different to how it is in Galicia, in Navarra, in the Basque Country, in Andalusia, in those kinds of places. Those are kind of, first of all, the economies are very vulnerable, very tourism-based, which kind of makes people really nervous. Like the way, as Hemingway famously said, the way people go bankrupt is slowly, slowly, all at once, which is that you try, you see things are deteriorating, but you somehow try to keep the show on the road kind of thing until eventually, like, you've no options. And that's kind of what people managed last year, which is that they managed somehow to keep the show on the road. But those things are now kind of exhausted. And it doesn't look like we're going to have much of a season. We're definitely not going to have, like, you know, mass tourism or anything like that. So, you know, what's going to happen? And there is a lot of nervousness. I mean, Madrid is better because, of course, we have a lot more employment in Madrid. And also the Madrid, my life isn't too bad. The bars are open, the schools are open. I'm teaching classes, you know, face to face and things like that. So, but there is a lot of nervousness. Now, the final thing I want to say is that, these numbers that people read about, you know, like they always, going back to The Economist, there was always this joke about if you met the people who write for The Economist, you'd never read it. And the similar kind of a situation with if you met the people who collect the statistics, like you'd never believe the statistics. And so, you know, this thing about like tourism is 10, 11% of the economy. How is that number collected? If you think about how that number is collected and how true it is. So we're starting to see, you know, whether it really is. I mean, it may be a lot less. And it depends on all factors like double counting and things like that. But there's no danger that families support each other. I mean, if I won the lottery, for instance, you know, I'd have to give out the money amongst my family. You know, that's kind of the way that families support each other, and they will continue to do that. And family is famously, as someone famously said, it's Spain's best thing and their worst thing. It's their, you know, best thing in that when people do get into trouble, the family rallies round. But it also stops problems from getting fixed because the families kind of manage them in-house. So I think there is a lot to be nervous about Spain, what will happen to Spain's economy, a lot to be nervous about if tourism numbers are down, you know. But of course, there's money coming in. And if the money is spent wisely, as opposed to, you know, disappearing into people's pockets and pet projects and things like that. I think Spain will be okay. Most people are, I don't want to be patronizing and say they live simply, but, they don't have big, massive debts, you know, and, you know, most things are available through the public system, you know, public transport. I mean, I look at the way people live in Ireland and they have, like, at the start of the month, they have private health insurance, they have petrol they have to pay, they have school fees they have to pay. Like, I've no school fees. I get the metro, you know, I the hospital is free kind of thing, you know. So in that sense, people are nervous and uncertain. I just hope the change comes out of it. I do hope that more enterprise is fostered and things like that. But we're not going to have a summer, and I think we should. It's serious, but not critical, if that's a fair thing to say.
Sorry, Joe, just wanted to say, you were saying about tourism. It is a huge loss if you look at it for Spain. But as you said, with Ireland, it's kind of up in the air whether it was tourism does us any long-term good, because as much money was spent last year on staycations as was spent for going abroad. Is there any of that in Spain?
Yeah, well, there always was.
Yeah.
Like when you marry, like, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, marrying my wife meant spending every summer in her pueblo, like non-negotiable. You know, you might say to her, like, well, let's go to Sardinia this summer. And it's like, it's not even it's a sort of seen as being like, you know, let's become rabbits or something. Like, it's just seen as being something absolutely absurd. So, like, I'm fortunate in that her pueblo is a very nice place to go to, but I have a lot of sympathy for. So, you know, I know people don't come on the Tortoise Shack for dating tips, but if you meet a Spanish girl, find out where her pueblo is, like literally before the relationship goes any farther. It's a really it's a really important piece of advice. So the domestic tourism was always a big thing, but it's kind of the casual stuff, you know, what are called second order effects by fancy business school professors. So it's the idea that if you have mass tourism, you have people giving out flyers to go to discos, you know, those kinds of things, informal economy. And that's where people suffer because that kind of thing is gone. So maybe you'll have like furlough payments and maybe, you know, people can roll over loans and those kind of things. But it's the guys giving out flyers in the street, you know, those or selling things by the beach and, you know, those kind of informal things. I mean, it's very difficult to know, you know, what they're going to do. But, you know, there's other things coming out of it as well. Like some people are literally just deciding to head to Galicia and grow vegetables, you know, and how bad can that be? You know, so instead of kind of like it legitimizes, like, you know, really disconnecting and, you know, reconnecting with nature and getting out of the rat race and stuff like that. So I think a lot of people, you know, while they were kind of, they were surviving just by selling stuff on the street or those kind of things, you know, picking during crops and things like that, they have now kind of just decided to literally just not even do that anymore and just to kind of go somewhere where living is literally as cheap as possible. You live off vegetables and you get a basic subsistence. And those are revitalizing small towns who now have people to go to, enough children to go to schools and stuff like that. So, you know, all of that is happening as well. I mean, that might sound a bit kind of utopian and kind of a way of trying to make people feel better. You know, that's really where Spain is one of the most unequal countries in Europe. I mean, that is, you know, a big problem. And pandemics, you know, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. That's the nature of what happens. But there are things I'm not worried for Spain in the way some people are. I'm hopeful that some good will come out of it as well as, you know, that there are people right now that are, you know, that are suffering. I think the other thing, of course, is that I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I've lived like this all my life. You know, I don't know what's happening from one day to the next, you know, whereas other people are finding it mentally very difficult to deal with these kind of issues. So, but I think, you know, Spain, like, you know, you, this is such a terrible cliche, but you walk out and the sun is shining, you know, birds, it that gets you some of the way, right?
It does, Joe. It certainly does. We walk out and it's freezing temperatures and driving rain. Look, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us this morning. It's always great to have a chat with you in Spain. And when this is all over, you're going to put us up in the attic and we're going to have 2 weeks of debauchery over in Spain with you.
Sorry, Joe, I do want to say one thing on the inequality issue and, you know, the donut economics. We will have to come back to that, I think, especially in terms of Spain and how, you know, how that seems to be something that I think we should have a bigger conversation for, because, you know, it's definitely not for today, but it's certainly something I'd love to revisit, especially since a lot of the issues we talk about seem to stem from those inequalities.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing, Tony, just on one thing is in the budget, you know, you look at the tax bans, you know. Like if taxing the rich is like taxing people over 140,000, you know, like, you know, for like that's sort of like, if that's the big fear, like don't let the commies into governments because they'll tax people earning over 140. Like I'm starting to kind of think that maybe the class struggle isn't what it was sold to me as. But like inequality, this is like, just give one mention, like this is when the biggest problem in Catalonia that nobody's really talking about this, that like nationalism is a way of deflecting conversations that need to be had about the things that matter to people. And, you know, if it's just like, and that's, you know, literally there has been 10 years lost because everything was just on nationalism. And instead we do need to talk about inequality and social justice and feminism and the green agenda and like all the blatantly obvious things that are being lost. And, you know, anytime we're talking, we're like, anytime the culture wars so far haven't come to Spain, but every so often somebody tries to inject them. And my response is always like, we're not doing the culture wars because, you know, they instead we're going to talk about the things that make a difference to people's lives.
Joe Haslam, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. And we will be back to you, I'm sure, over the coming weeks. A reminder, folks, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Look, there's a range in there, but, you know, there's a lot of extra content and the Sunday shows are terrific as well. We have a lot coming up. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.